I love Leg of Lamb. It's got a bit of a call and response thing. Oh, there's somebody at the door.
Oh, hold on a moment.
There's somebody at the door. Is it got back?
Hello, Mike.
Hello, John.
I'm John.
I'm Mike.
And you're listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Oh, yes, but it's not just us today, is it, John?
It isn't, no.
This is very exciting for us, this is.
We have a special guest.
Our first special guest.
Yes.
Would you like to introduce yourself, special guest?
I could introduce myself, I suppose, yeah.
Go for it, lads.
I'm Gary. Hello.
Yay! Hello, hey! Gary!
Hello. A fanboy that's on your show.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Well, this is it. There always has to be one. So, yes, Gary is radio host, and he's also a musician, and you can check out his two music projects, which is Wilcox Hulse and Don't Call Me Ishmael. They've both released fine work, and that's where you can check out his stuff. Also listen to The Quiet Revolution on Moorland's Radio every Monday evening, 7 o'clock. So I've done your plugging for you.
You have.
It's quite professional as well.
Normally I have to do this myself, and I've become quite practiced at it over the years, but thank you.
The tables have turned. I just wanted to kick off proceedings with a story that I found this week. I'll give you the headline. It is, Lewisham Cafe customer calls police after he was served the wrong type of tea and asked to leave.
Whoa, hang on. He was asked to leave?
Yes.
Right, okay. I was wondering if he was asking permission to leave. That's a bit mad. And if they weren't letting him leave, then that'd be a legit reason to call the police.
That would be, yes. Yeah.
And that's kidnapped.
Is there something missing, though? Because it's sort of like, here's your tea, now go.
I mean, that headline does serve up quite a disconnect.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks going on there.
Sevja Melissa, 30, who owns Birdie Num Nums in Lewisham Way, Newcross, said staff gave the customer a lemon and ginger tea instead of the lemongrass and ginger tea that he ordered.
Oh, what? All right.
She claims that when the man complained, staff apologised and offered him a full refund, but he was unsatisfied and started writing a TripAdvisor review while still in the cafe. Miss Melissa claims that when she asked him to leave, the man then called the police. However, the customer, Roberto Latarulo, a 33-year-old recruitment manager for a healthcare regulator, he has defended his actions and claims he was not given a proper reason for being asked to leave. Miss Latarulo...
You've picked the worst story here, haven't you? You've got names, though, it's like placing belching.
I've also got mouth ulcers, so
that's
is
not helping.
Not helping at all. Yeah. Mr. Latarulo, who lives in Lewisham and was visiting the cafe with his girlfriend, told the Standard, "I wanted a lemongrass and ginger tea. It's not something you find commonly in cafes, so I was quite surprised. But instead, I got a lemon and ginger tea bag."
# first world problems.
If you haven't got something, you tell the customer you haven't got what they ordered, then offer them an alternative. But they just brought the wrong thing. Mr. Latarulo claims he was shown a box labelled lemongrass and ginger tea, but it contained lemon and ginger tea bags. So...
I'm finding it hard to respond to this.
Well, just to provide the other half of the story...
That was only half the story.
Right.
Miss Melissa told the Standard, "I didn't throw him out. I just asked him to leave quite politely. He was leaving a review over a 9p tea bag, and I said, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. You're not using my internet to do that. I thought he was leaving, but he went outside and phoned the police." he used the cafe's Wi-Fi to write a bad review for her business.
After he actually rejected an offer of a refund.
Yeah.
For the fact that his tea didn't contain grass. That's basically what he comes down
to. Also, there's an interesting thing, because they're saying, they're giving away the whole cost structure of their business. They're saying, their tea bags are costing 9p, so I'd be tempted to call the police if they're charging any more than, say, 12p.
Daylight robbery!
3p to heat the water, I don't know. 15 pence maximum for that.
You've also got to factor in the slight wearing down of shoe leather of the baristas as they're walking back to and from behind the counter.
Yeah, crockery, but charge.
What that story highlights to me is the big problem I have with TripAdvisor. Because I don't enjoy TripAdvisor. I don't enjoy the idea of TripAdvisor.
I like the idea of it just fine, because in a perfect utopian world, it would be a place where you recommend great businesses who are doing a wonderful job, and people go, oh, brilliant, I must check that out. Yeah. But also you would call to light the ones with slightly shadier practices.
Yes.
In the real world, sadly, it's bitter individuals giving one-star reviews because something went ever so slightly wrong.
Yes.
And that is an issue, because I find that I only ever want to write a review if I've had a good experience. If it's really bad, I just don't really think about them again and just make a mental note not to go there again.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly,
I mean, if they try to evict me or call the police, then maybe that would be different. But generally speaking,
I mean, admittedly, if a member of staff burst into your hotel room wielding an axe, your first thought wouldn't be, I better make sure I include this in my TripAdvisor notes.
But you've actually reminded me of something just then. It was something that I saw.
Terrible holidays.
It was while I was working at the VOA, actually. Because sometimes we have to look at properties online to see what exactly they were about.
Yeah.
If it wasn't obvious from our records. And, you know, you'd Google it, and sometimes you would get the Google reviews.
Mm.
And there's one for a particular branch of a popular Italian food repository that you'll find on pretty much any high street in the nation.
Not an Italian food repository.
No. They may well have been from this review. And this family had possibly the worst experience you could possibly have at an eatery, insofar as the service was brusque. And just rude. The food was cold, and I think they didn't even get everything that they ordered. And the food also gave them some horrible stomach infection, which led to them firing it out of both ends for the following days. And they then missed a big family holiday because of that.
Right.
But in the review, they gave it 2 stars. I was like, what does someone have to do to get 1 star? it was crap service, awful food that made you ill.
And miss a holiday.
And miss a whole family holiday. What do you have to do to get 1 star?
The seating was very comfortable. that actually reminds me of something that gets passed around Twitter every so often. Every now and again I see it. It's a review somebody left on TripAdvisor for a pub. And and somebody had given it 3 stars but said, wouldn't recommend, as a friend of mine was murdered there.
Good God.
Oh, and the beer was warm too.
Good Lord, that is, yeah.
I find the notion, at the moment, as we live in an age of petty bellends, I find TripAdvisor a very difficult concept to warm to.
Mm.
But yeah,
yeah, it's one of the things where the concept is definitely much better than the actual execution.
I said lemongrass. I mean, I quite like the way that eateries and dining and venues and all sorts of places, they actually have chance to respond to the reviews.
It's difficult to do that without looking petty, though. So yeah, even that's not ideal.
It is tricky, but I know that somebody left a negative TripAdvisor review of a restaurant somewhere and listed all these things were wrong, and then they weren't accommodating for her child.
Mm.
But the restaurant's response to that was, you kept leaving the child unattended, you kept going out for fan breaks, and everything, the food was cold because you just weren't eating it.
Mm.
It's not the time Van Morrison went in.
No.
I wonder if it's possible to write a TripAdvisor review for a Van Morrison concert. I don't know if that's possible.
If as long as you can do it in under 20 minutes.
Yeah. He was far too prompt. 0/10. Would not recommend. Right.
Do you want to sting it, John?
Yeah. I'll sting your ass.
Just do it. Did you start to sting my ass?
Maybe.
All right, just checking. What are you drinking, John? Let's get that out of the way.
I am...
You're still on the same thing, aren't you?
I've made a bottle of Staffordshire cider last 2 weeks.
Ah, the magic of radio. I'm drinking Weller Wheel by Wheel Ales. This is the same brewery that made John jettison half a pint of stout over his carpet. But I managed to get this one out of the bottle without any incident. And it's actually lovely. And it's light and hoppy.
Oh.
It's rather nice. Yeah. And what are you on there?
I could say, well, I tried to tie this in theme-wise little bit, but not quite. So I was up in the northeast fairly recently.
Right.
And and so that has a link with something we're going to talk about shortly. But this is it's a craft ale from Settle Brewery. And I got it from Reghead, which is up in the northeast. It is a 9 standards porter, number 3. And it's very, very nice.
Oh, sounds right, that does. Mm.
And it's not that, doesn't seem to be that lively, so it's very... Nothing
Settle. Has been jettisoned from my direction
isn't
thus
that,
far.
It's amazing, John.
Settle. Settle.
Settle. Yeah. Oh, fuck off, John. let's get down to business.
Ugh.
Yeah, we're doing, with our celebrated guest, we're doing a bit of one of those album swats, aren't we?
Album swats that we don't seem to get round to as often as we'd like.
Yeah, but this will be the third one, though. So that's reasonably often.
Yeah.
But this is a bit different, obviously, because there's three of us. And we could have had three albums, but...
That was a thought I entertained.
But given that we decided on this about 2 days ago, that would have been a bit much. I would have made for some kind of bumper episode. So instead, John and I have recommended an album that we're both familiar with.
Yes.
And Gary's recommended one to the two of us.
Yes.
So our album...
is Nothing Important... by Richard Dawson.
A guy who we saw at ATP, where this whole podcast event actually kicked off.
It is.
And Gary, you want to tell us a bit about your choice?
My choice is the current release from Andrew Bird, which is called Are You Serious?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think you certainly, Mike, are aware of Andrew Bird's.
Yeah, material. Yeah.
I don't know whether John is.
No, this is a new one to me, both in terms of album and artist, and I had a really good listen to it.
Shall we talk about Andrew Bird first, then?
Yes.
If you tell us a bit about why you picked Andrew Bird, then Gary.
Okay. So I'm a relatively recent convert to Andrew Bird. He's been around playing music since the late 90s, of course, but right. I'm kind of aware of him on the kind of periphery of my musical taste, but never really delved that deeply. And I've got into him in over the last 1 to 1.5 years through a mutual friend of John and mine, Mr. Jack Tasker. And he is a big fan and has been a big fan for a while. And he pointed me in the direction of some tracks from previous albums. So an album in particular called Weather Systems, which I think was about 10 years old now, or maybe even a little bit older than that. And a few other tracks, Three White Horses, Pulaski at Night. And so I liked them, and a lot of times I'd listened to them, but I felt that I needed to delve a little bit deeper. Never quite got round to it until at the beginning of this year, or towards the end of last year, Jack asked us to go to Amsterdam for a gig he was going to see, which was a festival that took place at the Musicgebouw in Amsterdam.
That's the one that Neil Finn played at.
He did. So yeah. I was at that concert with Jack.
Yeah.
And we watched a whole array of fantastic music that night.
Yeah.
But the headline act was Andrew Bird. He was playing solo. And that was a fantastic gig. So we sat watching him in a tiny theatre at the top of the Musicgebouw. You could see out onto the streets outside. It was one side was all glass.
Wow.
And there were trains going past right in front of it. It felt strangely like we were in a Scandi drama.
It does. It sounds absolutely charming.
It was.
But like something devastating is going to happen any minute.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was, the whole evening was fantastic. One of the things we saw was a marimba quartet, which was staggeringly good, amazingly good. Also there was a brass band there called Perhaps Contraption there from London. The whole evening was great. Neil Finn played with his Unlimited Orchestra, and Andrew Bird came on and played a few tracks with him. So this had been the build-up, and then the finale was Andrew Bird playing solo.
Yeah.
He came on barefoot, playing to this theatre full of people who were hanging enthralled onto every note, and that was amazing.
Yeah.
Whilst we were there, we discovered that he'd then announced a series of live dates in the UK. We'd gone to Amsterdam because he wasn't playing anywhere around here.
You brought us all the way out to this fucking theatre in another country. Jesus fuck, and you're coming here. Oh, bastard.
I am so glad that accent came out in this episode. I was concerned. I was concerned that you would not be able to crowbar it into an episode that was predominantly Amsterdam based.
He finds a way. Yeah. He finds a way.
You weren't going to stage a walkout if I didn't do it.
I may have considered that. So we actually went, when we came back from this concert, it was so good, we bought tickets that night to go and see him in Manchester. Where he played with a full band in Manchester Cathedral. Nice. So I've seen him live twice this year in two staggeringly beautiful venues, and he's just captured my heart.
Awesome, yeah.
Brilliant.
I mentioned the other night that I was familiar with it. I've got a couple of his albums. Actually, my wife is more of a fan of his than I am, because I got, I think it was Noble Beast, through the Rough Trade Album Club. And I thought it was very good indeed. I played it to my wife, she absolutely fell in love with it. So I ended up buying Armchair Apocrypha for her as well. And she loves that as well. She's got them both on her little latest stick in her car for all of her journeys to and from work. She loves a bit of Andrew Bird.
Yeah.
I was quite familiar, and I was quite excited at the idea of listening to some more of his stuff. Getting a good excuse to pick up another one of his albums, so thank you for recommending it.
I was going to say it's a pleasure. I'm glad you liked it, but of course I don't know whether you did like it.
I bloody well did.
that's good to know.
It was cracking, because it had some of the feel of some of the Andrew Bird that I was familiar with, that kind of where folk meets alt pop kind of feel, the kind of chamber pop vibe that it's got similar qualities whilst not sounding necessarily like Divine Comedy, that chamber pop vibe. But also, oddly enough, I was listening to it while waiting to the bus just on the way here, and I just kind of zoned out for a minute while I just started the album off. And I just looked at it and thought, when did I start listening to Bill Withers? And I just got to do that. You know, there's something about that first track. He just sounds like Bill Withers all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Yeah, I've not picked that up at all.
It's just because I just kind of completely just. There's just a certain quality in his voice. It's not like an identical sound. It's just there's a certain quality to his voice, and maybe partly because my dad likes to listen to a bit of Bill Withers every now and then while I was quite
always
small.
Always putting ducks in microwaves.
Yes. Oh, Christ. but yeah, it was just a certain. There is a bit more of a soulfulness to some of the tracks than in some of the stuff that I was more familiar with. But yeah, it's an absolute corker.
It's interesting, the chamber pop thing that you talked about. I do have a penchant for chamber pop, so Divine Comedy, another band that I do like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hadn't really picked up on that. What is interesting for me in how you've taken this album, I suppose, having a previous history with his music, is that this is really the first album that I've properly bought into right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And so now when I go back to the older stuff, there's a development in the sound, and this sounds quite different to some of the earlier stuff. So I was I'm intrigued as to how you saw that path through.
I've only dabbled in his work myself, so I'm perhaps not the biggest authority on his music.
It is a funny thing though, isn't it? When you start listening to a band from one of their later albums, and then you start working back. Yeah. You're constantly comparing it to the first thing you heard of them.
Mm. Yes. I found that even if it's not the first thing they did, you're comparing it to that first experience.
I found that with St. Vincent. I started in the middle of her albums, and that her first album was the last album I ended up getting.
Mm.
it's a really weird process. This is the first thing I've ever heard of Andrew Bird.
Didn't know the bird is the word?
I didn't know that. Everyone else has heard it, but...
Everyone's heard about the bird, John. Oh,
wow. I'm so late on the uptake.
Yeah, anyway.
I'm not the anti-hipster.
Yes, no.
So what about you, John? I mean...
What about you, John? What's your deal, John?
What's the story?
I thought it was really good. Like Mike says, there's a whole sort of, it's difficult to pin down a style of music because there's a bit of soul in there. Some of it can be quite folky. I even like Capsized. You start off thinking it's got a kind of a folky vibe to it, and then there's really a really nice soul sound comes in.
So that was the bill with this track.
I know what the section that you mean. I've never it's never hit me in that way, but I can see what you mean, definitely.
I really loved Truth Lies Low.
That's a great track.
I love that opening lyric. This is a game you can play alone. Do the walk of shame from the comfort of your home. Those lyrics I just really like. I think my favourite track is probably Saints Preservers.
Yep.
Because I've got the fact it's not three words, it's two. And so just the fact that the title is Saints
Preservers.
Yes.
And then the track after that, is it The New Saint Jude?
The New Saint Jude, yeah.
That goes a bit Paul Simon.
It does. And I think in some of the reviews of the album, Graceland's been mentioned on it. It's that kind of bass. Does rhythm that comes through it. No, I know what you mean. You've chosen some of my favourite songs on the album there as well.
It's the whole thing has a really nice flow. It's got a great sound. It's got a nice mix of sounds that don't render you feeling like you're listening to the same thing all the way through. See also Babylon Zoo. but as well, I was saying this to Mike earlier. There was something interesting about the album that it. There were elements of it where, at one point while I was listening to it, I had to just go and check when it was released because some of the sounds of it would have fitted in with, like, say, if it was on the soundtrack of a film that had been released in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't. Some aspects of the album wouldn't have sounded out of place.
It's something that is basically also true of some of his other works as well. It's simultaneously retro and timeless.
Yeah,
got quite a filmic theme to some of his music, and I think he has written soundtracks before, so he's written scores.
To get hold of is what I completely forgot about until I was actually purchasing the album off of Amazon. I'd forgotten that he'd done a cover album of The Handsome Family.
Yes, he has. Yeah,
I love a bit of Handsome Family.
Yeah, me too. And that's, I think he's big friends with them. I would like to. I've never actually heard that album though.
And I think I need to grab hold of that. That sounds right up my street. That does.
Yeah,
I mean lyrically, I love him as a lyricist of quality that could be debated with anybody who wants to debate it. But I listen for lyrics, and I really like some of his lyrics are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song on the album called Puma, which I think is the fourth track.
Yeah,
and I read that is about his wife was ill. I think she had cancer, but she was having some kind of radiotherapy. And so there's a line in the lyric about she was radioactive for 7 days. And apparently that was that he wasn't allowed to go in and visit her for 7 days.
Mm.
But the whole thing about the Puma is that his wife has always been convinced that she's a cat.
Right.
They thought that she was... I can't remember if she was pregnant at the time or I think that was it, and she was going to give birth to a cat, and I think it was partly the medication she was on. So it's just a really interesting story, and that he writes, and apparently the whole album, he wrote the whole album in 7 days.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. 7 days that she was radioactive.
I don't know whether it was those 7 days or whether there were other unradioactive days where...
Well, this is a convenient number.
Yeah. I suppose, you'd need something to do in the time allotted.
Yeah.
Just wander off and write an album in the next room.
To take your mind off it for a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I have to laugh because on a very slightly related, this is quite tangential, but I always love the story of Neil Finn writing Pineapple Head.
Okay, great song. You're not going to spoil it for me, are
you? No. His son Liam was ill with a fever, and he came out with some really odd shit while he was with a high fever, and Neil was sent to go and get like a towel and some like cold flannel or something like that, and he was discovered in the kitchen writing all the shit down that Liam had said. So like at least the first verse is stuff that Liam was saying whilst being really deliriously ill.
That's fantastic.
It's just brilliant. And he's just like hunched over, like, I am such a bad person. But still, fuck it. This is a hit. It's a hit.
Anyway, I think we've given that a right old discussion. I think that everyone in the room here enjoyed it.
That is a big mutual thumbs up there.
So let's hit that sting and then change some albums.
Yeah. So do you want me to not sting your ass this time?
Please don't.
Right, okay.
Did it again then, didn't he, John? He pressed the wrong button.
Yeah, they're so close together.
Yeah. he pressed the button to sting my ass that time. Oh,
so. I'm sorry
about
that.
Just leave people's asses alone, John. God, if no one's taking us this long to get a guest.
If you're going to bring a donkey to my house... Wah, wah,
wah. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about the other album. Let's talk about Richard Dawson.
Yes.
And Nothing Important. Because, just to give a little introductory thing as to why we picked it. Yeah. We wanted to pick an album, obviously, we both had some interest in.
Yes.
And also one that we hadn't really talked about previously, with the exception of the very, very first ATP podcast.
Yeah, ATP-ness.
Lord. Richard Dawson was a bit of a punt because it was recommended to us by Carl, our fellow traveller.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually staying in our chalet. He just kind of gave him a lift.
Yeah,
Alice gave him a lift.
He came with us and he came back with us.
And we just kind of pop up every now and then. He suddenly appear in our chalet or with us at one of the gigs. He just always seemed to be there.
He was always like just moving through the crowd like a festival messiah.
Yeah. And he seemed to know everyone.
You did talk about him in the first episode, and I just assumed that you knew him previously.
I didn't know him at all.
I knew
him recently.
Yeah, well, I met him at Bottlecraft.
Mm.
He works at and when I started going to Bottlecraft, they were having music listening evenings. And so we would all just stand around listening to music and having a bit of a chin wag and that. And then in the run-up to ATP, I didn't actually know that he was going. I think he'd said that he was considering it, and he sent me a message saying, oh, could I be really cheeky and ask if I could...
Catch a lift.
Mm.
Unfortunately, Alice is the kind of accommodating person who will help out pretty much any waif and stray. As long as she can be sarcastic at them.
and you know, if it turned out to be a wrong, then it would have been entirely on me.
Yeah.
I was prepared to accept that. He's very much not a wrong, and he's a great guy.
There's a slightly peculiar vibe about him, but in a very nice way.
Yes.
That, you know, you're drawn in. And that messianic thing you talk about. You're kind of drawn into him.
Yeah.
And you want to be his friend. And he is an absolutely lovely guy, if a bit strange.
Yeah, I mean, my mental image of him being at ATP is just walking through, and my brain has edited this post-fact. Is him walking through, just with his arms outstretched, and just reaching out to people.
And then this, like, glow behind his head.
And then coming back to tell us how Stuart Lee's getting on.
Yeah.
What?
And it was absolutely bugger getting all of these 12 disciples into the car on the way back.
It really.
Just fix that trailer onto the back of Alice's car.
She didn't appreciate me trying to nail on that roof rack.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He suggested that we check out Richard Dawson. He was telling us about it on the car ride on the way up, about how this was a guy from the Northeast who would deliberately detune his guitar in a very artistic fashion.
The Northeast, you say?
The Northeast. Oh, there's a bit of a link there, isn't there? Don't do it, John. Don't do it. I will punch you. I'll sting your ass.
I haven't got a donkey. Oh. Joke's on you.
Oh, double lols. Oh. Anyway, yeah, he was just doing a solo performance. Him and his heavily detuned guitar. And it just sounded really interesting.
Yeah.
So we went along to check him out. And he was really interesting. He was absolutely bloody funny. Quite funny as
he
well.
He was really funny. One of his opening remarks of his set was... He was telling a story. He'd just been to the barber and he'd had a haircut and he'd asked for a beard trim.
He's normally quite bearded.
He's normally heavily bearded. But they pretty much shaved it off.
Yeah, they trimmed him a bit too closely that a jowl appeared. So I'm shaved off. And he was talking about how he considered not coming along to ATP at all. But and as he put it, if he hadn't turned up, then no fucker was going to be there. Yeah. There was already so many cancellations even on that first day.
Rumours
of cancellations. Oh Jesus! It was a fraught event. But yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. So we all ended up buying some little bits and bobs of his stuff at the concession stand.
I've bought one album that I still haven't listened to.
Whereas I left it a bit late. I intended to actually buy another album, but this was the only one that was there on CD, and I can't. I'm sorry, format nerds. I can't be arsed with vinyl. I'm very sorry. I'm a CD lad, I wanted to buy an album on CD. The only one that was left was Nothing Important, and so I'm going to buy it. Opened it up. I didn't have anything to listen to it on the time. Opened it up. Found out it was a 4-track. And I thought, shit, I've just bought an EP for a tenner. But when I got home, it turned out that two of the tracks are massive.
Yes.
There's two bizarro instrumentals, one at either end, and then two enormous songs in the middle. Nothing Important and The Vile Stuff.
Yes.
And those actually do have him singing.
Vile Stuff is epic.
The Vile Stuff is one of the most spectacular songs I think I've ever heard. The story of a group of year sevens on an away day, and one of them has a Coca-Cola bottle containing a spirit.
Yes.
It's an interesting bit of phrasing.
Was it you who linked me to a piece? Somebody wrote a really in-depth analysis of The Vile Stuff in particular.
And how it draws back into, interestingly enough, Jesus and his 12 disciples.
Ah.
The whole album is about the 12 disciples.
Yeah.
You've got Judas
Iscariot and Doubting Thomas. The album.
Exactly, the two instrumental tracks. Mm-hmm. And the other disciples are all mentioned by name in the song.
Yeah.
But kind of are given roles, so that either the children or teachers or some other kind of secondary characters all have the names of the disciples.
Is it his neighbour Stephen at one point he mentions or something?
The one who lost his two fingers to a staffy cross.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, with a pepper army in his bum.
Maybe it's Andrew. I can't remember. Yeah, that's the one.
I know Cy Shovel is the one who throws up into a Reebok pump and tries to get in bed with Miss Bartholomew.
The imagery in the song is just absolutely marvellous.
And apparently also is mentioned in, because that's an article and an interview, the one that I linked to.
Yeah, yeah.
And during the interview he reveals that when he was younger he did suffer from hallucinations every now and then. And one time he actually did hallucinate some kind of scene through the walls of his bedroom, which is alluded to in the whole bit where he's talking about how his walls are painted in this black and white stripes of Newcastle United.
Yes.
Through which he perceives a horse-headed figure.
Yes.
That whole bit, every time I hear that bit, it gives me chills.
Yes.
Because he's just holding a brambles to the west.
Yeah.
He is the king of children. And tomorrow... Come on, my lad, tomorrow is on its way, or something like that. It's such a vague... pagan nonsense.
Well,
it's so terrifying.
Do you know what's really funny? And I couldn't work out why this was, but I was listening to the album,
yeah,
and I kept thinking of The Wicker Man.
Yes.
And now you're talking about the piece that I've put. I've I'll be honest, I've listened to it all the way through once and then and then tried to dip in and listen to little bits of some of the, in particular, the two main tracks. So I probably haven't picked up on all of the lyrics yet or all of the imagery in there. But I just kept thinking, this reminds me some way of The Wicker Man.
Absolutely. I mean, let's curtail our dissection of the album and turn over to what you actually thought of it, because it's a weird one, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's weird, and I've never listened to Richard Dawson before. I knew of him by name before, I think, your podcasting started. Then you mentioned him again, and I think somewhere in the back of my head I'd said, you know, I must check him out.
Yeah.
And then I did a little bit of research before I listened to the album, and it described him as folk, which I mean, I'm not sure how you would describe Richard Dawson. He doesn't fit a neat little box, does
he? I mean, the folk umbrella is one that he does kind of hide under, but it's a very unusual kind of folk.
The instrumental came on at first and I thought, oh, it's going to be an entirely instrumental album. I'd read about how he detuned the guitar and he plays this nylon stringed guitar. I don't know whether that's still the case.
I think it is.
So I was expecting something to be a little bit, maybe, I don't know, avant-garde or slightly left field.
It is a little, yes, in various areas.
And then the first bit of Nothing Important, the second track, which is 15 minutes long, comes on. And the lyrics are so I don't know whether they are truly autobiographical, but it's almost like he's reading a book, but doing it to the music. So
the two tracks are semi autobiographical in that he takes events from his own life and kind of builds them into a narrative that is not autobiographical. Like there's the bit in Nothing Important where he sees his uncle waving him to him from the shore, his dead uncle waving to him from the shore. That happened. That was one of his hallucinations. That he actually saw his uncle waving to him.
Okay.
From the shore. But a lot of the rest of it is things he's made up or things that happen to other people that he's just kind of pulled together into one big narrative.
Kind of like if you draw a fictional scene on tracing paper and then put it over a photograph.
Yeah, kind of.
That's my favourite metaphor. Except it's a simile because I use the word like.
Yeah. Could change that on the edit.
And we'd only really wanted your second favourite metaphor anyway. No, it wasn't. It's very interesting. It reminded me a little bit of the Richard Brautigan kind of fictionalised novel, which is To the Wind Blows It All Away, which is about how he'd supposedly shot a friend of his when he was a boy. I think he'd just grazed his ear or something, but in the book it's much worse, it's darker than that. And then the book goes on and moves kind of more distant away from the truth as it goes through, and I got the impression that it started really kind of autobiographical because it mentions the date of his birth. And
The circumstances of his birth actually were quite creepy for me because they're very, very similar to the circumstances of mine. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember what the exact lyrics were that kind of freaked me out slightly, but I think it's the date. There's certain circumstances of the birth that are actually very similar to my own.
Yeah.
But the character's older. But I think it was in May. It was around about the same date.
Well, it is because it's the same date as my wife's birthday. Although a few years before, just a few, but and that struck me. But I love it when people. It's funny. I'm a bit of an accent Nazi at times. I don't like to hear it spoken. So there's nothing worse than listening to a local news program and they seem to pick the biggest kind of buffoons from the local area. And then I don't enjoy accents. But I love to hear song sung in regional with regional tones, and so he does that spectacularly.
He's got a cracking voice for singing folk.
Yeah,
good. I have to say, actually, in terms of Richard Dawson, I think there's an album of his from 2013 called The Glass Trunk, which I really, really recommend delving into.
That's a beauty.
I enjoyed the first track. I was listening to this album in the shower and it came on Spotify and the first track of The Glass Trunk West. So I'll go back and listen to the rest of that album.
There's some marvellous imagery in The Glass Trunk.
Which is the one that's got Poor Old Horse on it?
That's Glass Drunk,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Parole Horse. Yeah. That's a horrible song.
It is.
The lyrical content of that would give you fucking nightmares.
It's basically about three men who are really there's an old knackered horse.
They're trying to kill it. They're trying to kill the horse.
But they keep bodging it up.
How do you write a song like that?
Well, it's based on something that he found in a museum, I think.
Right, okay.
I think there was someone actually written about these people trying to kill the horse, right. And he basically turned it into a song. I'm sure I read that somewhere.
He did it very well.
Yes, it's a very affecting. It's all vocal. That one. There's no music to that one. About a cappella. That's the word I'm looking for.
About half of the Glass Trunk is a cappella. It seems to alternate between a cappella I can't even figure out what that guitar is tuned to.
The sounds of the universe.
The sounds inside his head, I think.
Yes.
He's gone beyond like drop C and drop D, and he's just.
it is strange, and it does take a short while to tune your ears almost, but once you get it, it's like, I would imagine, you've learnt a foreign language, and all of a sudden something turns on in your head.
Yeah,
that makes you understand it. And
it was definitely very helpful that we'd seen him live.
That was
the big key in the door to getting his recorded stuff.
Yeah,
and if you do get the chance, I strongly recommend, because firstly, hearing him singing,
he's
a force of nature. He bellows like a wounded bull.
Oh, he's raw as fuck.
Yeah, but the vile stuff. In particular, live was amazing.
Yes,
there's a lot more going on in the background in that song that you don't have when he's performing it live. It's just him and this poor wounded guitar that he's just beating with an image of his life, and so it becomes even more fraught as a song. Just hearing it, just the two of them on the stage, him and that poor device.
I mean, if I have one negative, and really I have almost nothing negative to say about this album, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think it's as a, maybe it's my radio kind of self coming in here, is that I wondered why he'd recorded two 15-minute songs rather than, let's say, six 5-minute songs.
Yeah.
Because I can't play any of those on the radio, or not easily.
As much as
not unless I need to go for a really long toilet break.
You never know. You might have something from that Italian food place. Both ends. And here's Richard Dawson. Yeah, yeah.
I've got to go and jettison.
Bear with me a minute. I think you can just about manage some sort of radio edit of the vile stuff.
Just about. There's a video edit that's about 3 minutes shorter, but it's still over 10 minutes.
Yeah, the radio edit, 12 minutes long or something. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It cuts out the big old intro.
There's a whole big instrumental introduction to it.
Mm. And there's a lot at the end as well. But even if you just cut it down to the bits where the actual song happens, that's still a comfortable 10 minutes or so.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we were laughing the other day about Fuck Buttons.
Fuck Buttons, yes.
And the great. You know, the music could be brilliant. They could produce the most radio-friendly music. But you couldn't play them because of the thing. Like, why have you intentionally gone out of the way to call your act Fuck Buttons?
I think it's a bigger deal for Holy Fuck, because they actually do have some songs that could actually get a bit of radio airplay, but they're called Holy Fuck.
Yeah.
And Fucked Up as well are another band that I really enjoy. A bit kind of old hardcore punk, but they have a nice little melodic aspect to them as well. They're just beautiful songs.
Yeah.
No one's going to play Fucked Up. What are you talking about?
Maybe you could call them Up.
Up. Oh, Funked Up. Flipped Up. Those crazy mother flippers. We've got Flipped Up, Flip Buttons, and all that.
What you need ideally is like every radio desk needs just like a bleep button.
Yeah.
And not enough radio desks have like a button they can just like.
I think we've had a right good chat there about two albums there. I think on the whole, on balance, we've enjoyed.
I think so, yeah. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for recommending Richard Dawson, a new one to me.
Yeah, and thank you for recommending Andrew Bird.
Yes.
I enjoyed having the excuse to buy another one of his albums.
Yeah. I enjoyed actually listening to him for the first time ever.
So we're all happy. I'm dying for a piss. Come on.
You have been listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Oh, yes, you have.
Yes. This podcast was hosted by Audio Boom. The music is by Attack of the Vapors. I've got those two things in the wrong order. And that's it from us. Cheerio.
Laters.